This is us learning in public, trying to...
Literally learning in public.
Yeah.
We were at Vancouver Public Library. Yes. There are glass doors. Yes. We were literally learning in public.
Pulling back the curtain of silence.
And learning what freedom feels like. I'm Nick.
And I'm Lala. This is Seen. Brown-eyed activism.
Healing at the intersections.
So today I wanted to explore cultural appropriation, but from a different angle than we usually talk about it. So I wanted to explore the idea of whether it's possible to appropriate your own culture and what the implications of that might be. Mm. And that might sound like a kind of strange idea, but I think a lot of us have struggled with this, whether or not we've used that particular language around it. So in particular, a lot of mixed race people, transracial adoptees, as well as people who belong to diasporas, often struggle with these questions. Mm-hmm. We might feel discomfort on our own about engaging with the cultures that our parents, grandparents, ancestors come from. And we might be told that we are outsiders or frauds by people who feel that they have more claim to the culture than we do, mm-hmm. whether that's people who both of their parents belong to the same culture or people who are from the countries that our parents or grandparents immigrated from. Have you had this issue come up for yourself?
Hell yeah. Like, this is when we talked about this as a topic of conversation. You could have, for me, two parents who are from the same culture. They're Kenyan. Growing up thinking
and being from Kenya,
and
right?
From
both
Kenya.
Your parents.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like
grew up
having
there.
Been born and raised in Kenya into their adult lives, and all of my siblings being born in Canada, in Vancouver, being told either explicitly or in other kind of covert ways that this is your culture and you're not mm-hmm. of this culture. Or on the flip side, being told, like, don't you know where you come from? You are Kenyan before
right.
you're anything else. And so it's really hard to know, like, where you really belong or like which identities you're expected to straddle. And I think for a lot of us, we're familiar with like the code switching, especially when we have immigrant parents who want us to adopt their cultural identity, but we're also living and being raised in Western cultures.
Right.
So that definitely resonates for me.
Yeah. So you're one of the third culture kids, as it's sometimes
is
called.
Is that what it's called?
Sometimes, huh. Where it's like there is the culture of your parents.
Right.
There is the culture of the place that you are living in.
Yes.
And then there's you.
And
right. you're not really of either one fully.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that's confusing. And especially when it comes to something like culture that is... I mean, is it wrong to say it's inherently group oriented? It's
yeah, because you. I mean,
it's not something you really have alone, right? It has
shared,
to do with other people.
Yeah, that's the point of it. You
yeah.
share culture with people. Otherwise, it's just like that's your personality. Like that's you.
Exactly.
You're an individual.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's why I think this is an interesting topic because we always come at things from slightly different angles, and mm-hmm. this is one where, yeah, it applies to both of us, but in kind of overlapping ways.
Mm-hmm.
So
how does it apply to you?
Well, being part of a diaspora
yeah.
as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, my father immigrated from India, but then also being mixed race.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
I have that culture from that side. But then I was raised more by my mom's side, and my mom's people are white
yeah.
and have been settlers here for a few generations. So I think I struggle with it in terms of both. I'm not, you know, Indian from India.
Right.
And so often people who are, they don't see me as Indian necessarily. They
mm-hmm.
see me as Canadian.
Mm-hmm.
And I think especially because Canada presents itself as this multicultural nation.
Yes.
So I think a lot of times people who are not from here, they buy into that more maybe and don't really know that when you're actually living here, having brown skin, I will never be fully
from
Canadian
here, right.
in
yeah.
the eyes of, you know, the dominant culture or
yeah.
the dominant society here. That doesn't include me.
Yes.
But I think a lot of times people from other countries don't realize that. So they just see me as Canadian.
Yeah.
But both identities then are denied to me.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think it can be really hard for some mixed race kids like myself who, first of all, they don't have both parents from the same culture. So they're maybe seen as different.
Yeah.
But then also, maybe the parent that you have from this other culture, didn't necessarily transmit that much of the culture to you. Or maybe you didn't grow up around them. Like, what about transracial adoptees as well? So they came from somewhere, but their parents who are raising them aren't going to be able to transmit culture to them. Mm-hmm. But again, if you're not white, you're inherently not a part of dominant Canadian culture in the same way.
Yeah, you're not. Like, there's, it's interesting you mentioning how if you have relatives from India, how they'll see you. It's kind of the same way that my Kenyan relatives will see me. They won't see me as Kenyan. They'll see me as Canadian,
right,
without understanding, because how could they understand, how would, yeah, they know what it is like to be, what do you say, third culture?
Third culture,
third,
yeah,
culture. And so I think it's really fascinating because when people are telling you who you are, a lot of the times the reaction can be to accept it, but or it can be to feel like you're getting boxed in,
right,
and to feel like you have to almost push back and establish like how Indian you really are,
yeah,
or how black you really are, how African you really are. And I think that kind of skirts into what we're,
exactly,
or the topic of conversation today, which is like feeling like you're taking a part of your own culture. And I think for me, why that resonates so much is because sometimes I can be doing my little black thing and I can think to myself and I can be really critical, am I really doing this the right way?
Mm.
You almost feel like there's this barometer for, or I feel like there's this barometer for blackness.
Right.
And when I'm not hitting that barometer for blackness, I need to show up and be like, I need to make up for,
right,
my lack of blackness somehow.
I was also wondering if this ever comes up for you because of like black American culture and the dominance of black American culture, if like being black outside of the U.S., if there is maybe some of these same questions of like, is this mine or do I belong or is it okay for me to participate in the same way? Does that come up ever?
Yeah, internally. And then I think when it comes to engaging with people who are black Americans, like or even black folks who are from places like Toronto, because, mm-hmm, I think black culture in Toronto is very different than black culture in Vancouver. And I think for myself, it's felt like for a long time, I felt very distant to black American culture because I felt like it wasn't mine to take up space in or to embody or to really enjoy, because a lot of it is so learned, so like, and it's so shared by people that you were raised with and you are family with, and I don't have that. But then I guess I started to realize, especially when I would start to go across the border as an adult and travel, is the fact that people don't see me when I'm like, you know, if I'm in LA as me, Black Nicole, no one sees me and is like, that black girl is descendant from Kenya and she's Canadian black. They're going to be like, no, 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 that black girl, that little nigga right there. Like, she's like every other black, right, person. And so I guess I started to orient myself more to this collective of, you know, I'm rooting for everybody black. I'm part, yeah, of this, like, this black diasporic people, this group. Not to say that I think that I can take the elements of somebody of, like, black American culture. Like, Southern black culture is not, I love it and I admire it and it's fascinating and I want to be in it and I want to be in the South and I love all that shit. But, like, it is not me putting on any kind of accent or whatever. It's not me walking with integrity in my own blackness.
Yeah, being who you are.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's where you start to skirt on the, like, am I appropriating this part,
right,
of a culture?
And so I thought maybe what we could do is look at some of the reasons that we want to engage in cultures that we descend from. Mm-hmm. And also look at the dynamics of cultural appropriation and then sort of look at how our participation in certain cultures, how does it fit in or not fit in with some of those things,
yeah,
and see where we're at. Because I honestly don't know the answer to these questions.
Me
I think
too.
It's very complicated.
It is.
Yeah.
I feel that because even being able to talk about it, it's difficult to talk about. So
yeah.
And usually we have lots to talk
it's
about.
It's difficult
all the
to
time.
Even find the language sometimes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because I don't think that appropriating our own cultures is the word, but it is the closest word that I can
exactly,
think of. Totally.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm glad you said that. Yeah. So some of the reasons that we might want to participate in the culture that our parents or grandparents come from, And I'm just saying parents and grandparents because I'm trying to maybe differentiate from white people who are like, I'm 1/64th like Cherokee or something like yes. that. And you don't have actual like people in your life.
Yes.
That you know.
Like kin. Like
yeah. People who, yeah. And that's complicated. This is why this is also complicated. And yeah, because transracial adoptees mm-hmm. might not have any family members in their life that they know. Mm-hmm. Right. But yeah. I think they still should be able to participate in certain ways. Mm-hmm. And so some of the reasons why we might want to participate is because it gives a sense of belonging, especially when we don't experience that in the dominant society that we live in. It's a way of connecting to where we come from.
Mm-hmm. Which is so powerful yeah. for a lot of us. Knowing that you have like a lineage and a people with a history.
Exactly.
And ideologies and spirituality. Like all that stuff that you, when you learn about that, about your people, it kind of opens your eyes to a purpose that you didn't know you had in some ways.
Totally.
I don't know if that
and
resonates.
Yeah, it does. And it this is something that's shaped you whether you realize it or not. Because yes. this is what's shaped your parents.
And their parents.
And their parents and their parents and their parents. Yeah. And that is what shapes you, both in terms of just when your parents raise you, like what they pass on to you. Mm-hmm. But also, there is more and more evidence that our ancestors' experiences are in our DNA. So yes. I think it's really like it's just in your body somewhere, even if you don't have a lot of personal experiences with your parents. Mm-hmm. But then also, if you don't have personal experiences with your parents, looking at why that is.
Yeah.
Like, what is the, if you know, the parent who immigrated is not, or the parents who immigrated are not a part of your life for some reason, why is that? Mm-hmm. Or if you were given up for adoption, why is that?
Yeah.
Because often, you know, the circumstances of your family, that has a lot to do with that, right? Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. this all takes place in a culture and a place. So it's a part of you.
Yeah, I find it's so interesting. I remember when I was a lot younger, I always felt like being Kenyan or being African was something that was more put on me by my parents. And then I guess by nature of feeling that way, I sort of wanted to move away from even associating with Black people or like Blackness or Africanness, mm-hmm. you know, especially when you are seeing how whiteness is so privileged and seen as beautiful and desirable and all those kinds of things. But then I think, you know, moving into my more adult life, I'm always so much more drawn to straddling lines of, you know, North American Blackness and African Blackness and then like mixing those two things together, because I feel like that is the most accurate representation of what makes me me.
Yeah.
And so it's like knowing the understanding which mix of my Blackness really makes the ingredients to make a Nicole.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it's cool when people are able to sort of explore what fits for them and how that makes them feel the most comfortable in their skin.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, again, it's this combination of this is where you come from and this yeah. is where your roots are, where the history of your family is, and that's part of you. And then I also think, you know, living here, it's like we're so stigmatized for what we look like and who we are, and to actually be able to find things that make us feel great about who we are, make us proud of who we are, make us feel like we come from somewhere and we belong. Like when I started watching more Indian movies and, you know, reading more Indian literature, I thought like maybe I wouldn't have hated my name so much growing up because my name was always mispronounced mm-hmm. and it was always this like really difficult thing because no one could ever get it right. So as a kid with social anxiety, it's like they get it wrong and you try to correct them and they get it wrong again, you try to correct them. And it was just like this nightmare of social yeah, anxiety.
Absolutely.
And I thought, I feel like I wouldn't have hated my name so much if I had known that the PR at the beginning of the name was so common.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm watching all of these movies and like everybody's name like starts with PR and I'm like, oh my God, I feel so like seen. I feel like
totally.
I belong somewhere, you know? Absolutely. It's like I don't feel like why is my name the way that it is anymore, because this is why.
Yeah, I think you're speaking to this point where learning about your culture or the culture from which you came, your parents come from, can give you a lot of reasons as to why things are the way that they are.
Yeah.
In the dynamics with your parents, in the way that you, because sometimes the way that your parents put things on you culturally can make you either accept it really deeply or reject it really deeply. And just understanding sometimes why are your parents the way that they are with you can, first of all, make you see your parents as human beings that are flawed because, like, yeah, they are. But then again, it can also make you think of, like, what parts of my culture do I want to fuck with? Like, what parts of my culture am I, like, actually in this day and age? Like, I don't think this represents me and my beliefs.
Yeah. You know? And I think that's what gets hard, too, because culture is not static.
It's changing all the time.
It is. Yeah. And it should be. And there's a lot of things that, you know, we shouldn't accept about our own cultures. But then when we grow up with this distance, when we're either in a different country, we're maybe distant from our families, whatever it might be, we feel like we're outsiders and therefore we don't have the right, maybe, or we're not, you know, enough.
Like we're imposters.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And we're made to feel that way, I think, often.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of kind of measuring.
Yes.
I mean, in many different really violent ways where it's like blood quantum.
Right.
Right. But then there's also like we police ourselves within our own cultures
about
like being like, for me, I've been told so many times, like, you don't really sound black.
God.
And I'm like, do you hear the words that come out of my mouth? I'm quoting Chris Tucker from from Rush Hour 2. But like, if I'm speaking to you, I sound black because
I am speaking to you.
This is a black sounding voice because I'm a black person with a voice.
Yes.
That is how that works.
Yeah.
And I think it's really unfortunate because you'll have a lot of folks within their own culture feeling so goddamn alone.
Yes.
Because culture, like we're talking about how it's shared, it's a site of belonging, but it also is a site of ostracization if you're not towing the line and behaving in a particular way that's in line with everybody else. So when you're critical of parts of your culture, you're seen as like you're demonizing it, you're bringing it down, you're speaking the same language that people who are harming your culture are speaking as well. And I think the person that I stand the mostest, Amanda Seales, always gets a lot of criticism for that because, like, a lot of black folks will be like, well, you hate black men. You know, the way you speak about black men, you obviously don't like black men. And she's like, I love black people and I speak my truth about my experiences with black men because I want to be with y'all. I want us to all win. I want us to like be able to live in harmony and to fix this shit that's obviously not working for us. Just saying that this is the way it is because it's always been that way isn't good enough anymore. Like, we need to evolve as a people and be able to have the hard conversations in our own communities.
Right. You know? And I think what you're speaking to right now maybe is that it's a trap that as long as you're challenging sort of dominant power within any group,
yes,
people are going to push back. They're not going to respond well.
Absolutely.
And they're going to tell you that it's because you're not enough.
Yes. And for her, somehow, she's been told like she's not black enough. She's from Grenada, so she's not really black. And she's like, well, my mom's from Grenada, but like my dad is from, I think, like Chicago. She's like, I'm black.
But also they're both black, right?
Like
her mom is.
But also that too. It's like people have a really myopic understanding as to what blackness is. And I'm not sure if that the same thing holds for being brown or being of Indian descent. Like, is there a specific place where people are like, this is what real Indians are like? It's like India, like Indian folks are so diasporic. Like,
well,
like they're
also within India, there's like 80 million groups and
cultures.
But yeah, but the same thing happens.
Yes.
Right. And the same thing and it happens with mixed people. Cause I said that about Amanda Seales, that she has two black parents.
Yes.
Well, you don't have to have two black parents to be black.
Exactly. Thank
but
you. Facts.
The thing, again, this is the thing about the trap is like, no matter what, there is going to be something they'll get you on.
Yes.
So it's either that you don't have two parents who, you know, from this group, or you didn't grow up in this place, or maybe you did, but because you're challenging this, it means that
you're anti us.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
Exactly. There's always going to be something. That said, well, this is where I want to go over what the actual problems with cultural appropriation are and then talk about whether or not they can apply to somebody who is part of the diaspora, part of the group in some way.
Okay, go ahead.
So with cultural appropriation, it's not just, you know, sharing something that comes from somewhere else that makes it a problem. There is power dynamics that make it a problem. And there is specific ways that it happens that make it a problem.
Yes.
So when we talk about cultural appropriation, we talk about dominant groups taking from marginalized groups, and specifically we talk a lot about it when it comes to white people taking cultural things from people of color. There is picking apart what you like and don't like from the culture. There's stereotyping. There is the fact that you are not stigmatized in the way that people from the group are stigmatized.
When you do specific things.
When you do it. And so you actually get to benefit without the stigma. So
yes.
An example
Whites with dreads.
Exactly. So black people often are not allowed to wear natural hairstyles to work, for example. Or if they wear them, they might be more likely to be harassed by police or security guards.
Profiled, et cetera.
Exactly. So white people who wear black hairstyles, they don't face that same stigma, but they get the sort of cool factor. And actually, the cool factor comes from the fact that the group is stigmatized.
Exactly.
So you're actually benefiting directly from the fact that this group is stigmatized to make yourself edgy, to make yourself cool.
Yes.
Often, groups in power will also actually profit. Like, they might be selling, you know, Iggy Azalea or somebody.
Oh, fuck that bitch.
Takes and then sells. And because she's white, more people will buy from her than a black person doing the same thing, only way better.
Yes. Thank you for adding that part in there.
Yeah. And then the power, like, if there is a black woman who's as untalented as Iggy Azalea, she's never going to have a record
deal.
It's just not going to happen.
Exactly.
And then there is the power to actually change the meaning of it. So if a white person takes, like, a piece of a culture and then they decide, you know, this is how I'm going to wear this thing. And actually, it's a sacred thing, or it's like for a specific purpose. But the white person does it in a completely different way. That's the way that's going to then catch on. And so then this cultural thing has been hijacked.
Yes. Ooh, that's very comprehensive.
Yeah. Did I miss anything?
No, I think you've hit all the things. Yeah, I can't think of anything else.
So maybe I'll start with the one about being stigmatized, because I thought, well, I'm still going to be stigmatized. Like you said, you know, somebody who sees you isn't going to be like, oh, she is descended from Kenya and she's Canadian, so therefore I'm not going to be racist towards her in the state. Like, that's not a thing.
Yeah.
They just see a black person.
Exactly.
But I don't know if this will apply to you or not, to like your groups. But for me, something that was, I saw someone kind of talking about was the idea that people who have Indian accents, who maybe don't speak English, who are not assimilated in the same way maybe, mm-hmm. are going to be more heavily stigmatized. So a white person might still see me and I might experience racism. And if I'm, you know, wearing a sari or I'm wearing a bindi or something like that, it might be more so. But the fact that when I speak English and I speak without an accent will make me less stigmatized.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, code switching exists, right? And that's
but it's not even code switching, right?
No, it's not. But for black folks, for example, the ability to go from the corporate boardroom to like hang out with your friends in your own community, people who are not able to transition into both, you know, to code switch.
Right.
Of course, they're penalized in ways socially and by systems, especially when they're interacting with systems that are of like privilege or power, that expect them to adhere or toe a specific line of respectability or be a type of way in order for them to get a certain thing. I think it's not necessarily the code switching, it's just the ability to like go between and go back and forth, or know, like,
at least
understand
to fit in with the dominant group.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like, whereas if you don't have that ability, if you're not able to speak quote unquote eloquently or speak in a type of way that makes people feel comfortable with you as part of dominant culture and not as an other.
Yeah.
Right. You could have dudes with dreads who wear them in a certain way and dress in a certain way to denote like, hey, take me seriously. I'm a business person. And by seriously, I will use air quotes because it's like, it's a business setting. It's needing to
have the white gaze see you in a particular way.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas if you're a person who, you know, has those dreads but doesn't have the suit to wear,
right.
You know, people are going to treat you in a very different way. Yeah.
Yeah. So that one's complicated.
Mm-hmm.
I also think stereotyping, that can be complicated too, especially either if, you know, like me, you didn't have the culture transmitted to you, mm-hmm. by parents or close people to you.
Yeah.
Or just the geographical distance. I think sometimes we're learning about the culture from third parties, or we're learning from our own research.
Yeah.
And so we might be stereotyping in ways that we don't realize. We might have a more superficial understanding or an outdated understanding or an inaccurate understanding of what the cultural significance of something is.
Oh, totally. Dang, that makes me think of I went for lunch one time with a few women that I work with, all other black women. We were having a conversation. I think it was about, oh, we're all Kenyan.
Mm-hmm.
And we we were chatting, and something of the topic of Kenyan men came up. And I was born and raised here, so my proximity to Kenyan men is really my father.
Mm-hmm.
And these two other women were born in Kenya and I think raised for most of their lives in Kenya. And I had made some comment and I noticed the resistance from one of the other women. And after that, I was like, you know, I tried to like talk it away and I was like, yeah, but I know. And I'm like, do I know?
Mm-hmm.
Like what is the depth of my knowledge? Because if my knowledge is one person
right.
versus her knowledge being her whole community, her siblings, her people in her life, that, you know, everyone
knew.
That she's ever known for forever, like she's going to look at me and think like, who the fuck is this? She has no idea what she's talking about, which
right.
is very fair. Like
yeah.
I'm not in a place to make a generalization about certain things because I actually don't know.
Yeah.
Like, I can speak to my knowledge of Black men in Canada, because that's what I do know.
Right.
And if she were to say something that I felt like, oh, you don't really get it, I could speak up on that. But I think it's like knowing your role and staying in your lane.
Right.
It's sort of that walking that line of like the integrity piece is this in line? Is what I'm saying or how I'm behaving aligned with the person that I actually am or the person that I wish that I was? Or, you know, it's like asking yourself that question. I don't necessarily think that that means that as a Black person who's not from Third Ward, Texas, shout out to Beyonce and Solange, that I can't enjoy specific music or want to talk in a particular way or, you know, some of those things. But I also have to like take a hard look at myself and know like, am I putting on this costume? Like, am I taking bits and pieces of a culture that I actually am profiting off of? Because as well as the fact that, like, I'm not from there, I also talk like this.
Yeah.
When I'm talking, quote unquote, regularly.
Yeah.
So.
And I'm glad you bring up again, like, taking bits and pieces of it, picking apart, taking what you like and leaving what you don't like.
Yeah.
Which can be really problematic when a dominant group is doing that to a marginalized group.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it gets really complicated for us because I think we often do that.
Yes.
Especially because we don't always have access to it. Sometimes it's like, these are the pieces that I was able to learn about on the internet or something, or through reading or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
So we're taking pieces. And then I think it's also complicated, though, because if we're part of the group, like we talked about, culture also changes. So maybe the things that we're leaving, that's legitimate because culture can shift and change. And maybe it's okay for us to do that. But then at the same time, like, are we leaving this from a place of it's ours and we've intentionally left it? Or maybe, you know, because this is the thing, too. Dominant groups, marginalized groups, we're in the West. We're in North America.
Yeah, we're part of a dominant group.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah.
So maybe we are taking...
Part of the problem?
Well, I don't know. Sometimes, like, maybe we are taking some things and leaving others in a way that's problematic.
Absolutely.
And how would we know the difference?
I think when you get red, somebody tells you you're full of shit and they're like, this is inauthentic, or it comes across as inauthentic.
And then I think what's hard then, too, though, is... when somebody tells you that, sometimes maybe they're right. And then there's times where you're not enough. Like when they tell Amanda Seales, you're not really Black.
Exactly.
Right? It's like, how do you know the difference between somebody who is just making you an outsider because they want to?
Right. But
when it's a legitimate criticism of you. Like and when you don't have a lot of connections necessarily to the community,
it might
be pretty hard to like test out, is this a legitimate criticism of me or not?
That's a really good point, because I think there is always this tension between Black Africans from the continent feeling a type of way, and this isn't like a generalization necessarily, but feeling a type of way when Black Americans wear traditional African clothing or evoke traditional African spirituality. And I think, again, not to say that there aren't many Black Africans who welcome, you know, diasporic Black folks to like take their culture
right,
and like, you know. But I think it's really interesting because I'm always curious whether or not if the criticism comes from a place of wanting to protect and keep the culture intact, I don't know. I think that that's like there's a lot of merit to that, because especially for cultures, people of color cultures that have been appropriated by like Western white dominant societies and demonized.
Yeah.
I think that there's a lot of, and it's kind of how we talk about hip hop. What is the, I guess, barrier for entry for people to come into like hip hop culture and like be mm-hmm. part of it and then contribute to it. Is everyone who raps like part of hip hop culture, or are there some like people like the Iggy Azaleas who are taking from the culture and discarding the pieces that they don't like and profiting off of the backs of Black creatives and Black people and Black culture without really deeply knowing, and doing it almost with like a sense of entitlement?
Yeah.
It's really hard to know those things because you're playing with intention. You're thinking about whether you are making assumptions about who a person is and where they're coming from and how much they know or don't know. And we can't ever be – we can't police people like that, I think.
And I think it's really hard because a lot of times in social justice conversations, we talk about intent not really mattering, right? Impact yeah. matters. But then it's like, well, when does intent matter?
In the quest – I think like – I was going to say in the quest for like understanding yourself – and that's what I'm saying, like, understanding yourself, not trying bits and pieces of somebody else's self onto yourself. Like,
yeah.
in the quest of trying to understand who you are, I think intention really matters because that is this wholly separate conversation than a white girl who's putting on cornrows. You're not trying to understand yourself.
Right.
That's not understand. That has nothing to do with yourself. That's you thinking, like, that looks cool. I want to take that.
Right, but then I totally agree. And then what separates me from the white person who is 164th Cherokee according to their ancestry.com results? I mean, there is a very specific thing for me, which is, you know, my father is actually from this place and I know him and I
yeah.
But at the same time, I'm just kind of wondering, where do we draw the line, and where is it trying to understand where you came from, and where is it kind of grasping onto something that isn't yours? Because I think there are a lot of Indian, like, I actually, one of my sisters told me that some time ago when she went to India, one of our relatives told her that they thought it looked ridiculous when she and other Canadians tried to wear saris.
Wow.
And so she sort of like, okay, and it's like not something she's ever been into.
Wow.
And I'm thinking of like a friend that I have who is Black and like both parents are Black, mm-hmm. sort of saying like, why should we have to accept all mixed people as Black?
Wow.
Whose rule was that? Like, you're not Black in the same way I'm Black.
Whew. That's really difficult shit. I mean, I think in the conversations of excluding, including, I always wonder if you're for the exclusion of certain people who are part of your community but you say are not truly enough or not really fitting the bill. I always kind of am curious as to where you are in proximity to them. Like, are you not wanting, for example, are you not wanting a person who's like mixed race Black or light skin Black to enter into conversations of Blackness because you have been demonized on the basis of colorism? I think that that's a really important thing for people who are light skin and mixed race, or, and, you know, or a red is light skin Black folks, to think about.
Yeah.
You know, because it's not necessarily about, I don't know, I think in that context, it's not necessarily about saying that like you're not really Black. It's like your Blackness and my Blackness are not the same Black.
Right.
Like, we're living very different experiences, and it's very, very different. And I wish that we were able to have conversations about the particulars as opposed to having those generalizations, because the particulars we can all understand, I think. Like, if you are a person with kind of good sense, you can know that, like, if you are, like, lighter skin, you might be, within your Black community, be seen as different. But are you seen as different in a bad way, or different in a way that is, like, you pass the paper round test and, you know, all the in the block, like, you know, if you're straight, like, all the boys like you and, like, you're seen as the beautiful person with the good hair. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, I get it. You're seen as different, and maybe that doesn't make you feel good because, like, but also it's sort of like it's people who are, like, really attractive being like, everyone bullied me because I was attractive. It's like, I mean, like, that's really, I'm not trying to denote that that has had an imprint on you, but you have to understand that the people who are all regular looking to ugly are feeling a type of way.
Well, and, like, yeah, and, like, there's a difference between, like, a personal trauma and a sociological issue.
Yes.
So, like, if you were bullied because you were attractive, that might have been traumatic for you.
Yes.
And that might actually be something that you need space for and you need to heal from. And that's valid and that's legitimate and that's important.
Mm-hmm.
But it's important to also realize when it's not a sociological issue. And so when we come into political spaces, that might not be the space to center
yourself,
your particular experience in that case.
Yeah. And I think, I totally agree with that. It's really tricky, but I'm going to go back to just the idea of if we were able to have within our own communities conversations based off of like specific topics as opposed to we as the collective believe that this is how it is. Because it's like there's so much nuance.
Yeah.
And there's so many things that even as the dark-skinned black person who's seen as legitimately black, quote unquote, that I'm not going to understand about how a person who has, quote unquote, good hair and is light skin navigates the world.
Yeah.
That person has a lot more proximity to, and access to whiteness and the privilege that comes with it. But that's not to say that I understand what it's like to be them.
Right.
And I think especially it's just so shitty because especially within our own communities, let us be loving and empathetic towards each other. Unless there's some true harms happening where that person centering themselves in conversations where it has nothing to do with passing the paper round test.
Yeah.
And shit. How does it harm us any to allow the people who are part of our culture to engage with our culture?
Right. Yeah. And so I think maybe it comes down to relationships. And even if we don't have a lot of in-person relationships, and hopefully we can cultivate some, but even if not, I think we have to be really honest with ourselves and try to be as self-aware as we can about how am I holding the other people of this group in my mind and in my heart.
Yeah.
Right. And like the ways that I'm interacting with the culture or trying to engage with the culture, do they feel for me like they're from a loving place, from a respectful place? And maybe we'll get it wrong. Maybe like I placed that bindi a little wrong. I'm like really bad at wrapping saris. It's really hard.
Yeah. Personal experience?
Yes. Uh-huh. But if I'm doing it with love and with respect and with a genuine desire to connect with where I come from.
And to learn.
Yeah. Then I think that is important. And if, you know, the way that I'm doing it ever does impact somebody, I'll need to be able to listen. And then really sit with myself and think about the way that I'm impacting them. Is that something that's my responsibility? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, is that maybe their stuff that they're putting on me?
Yeah.
Or, you know, and like really doing that hard work with yourself and just sort of doing the best you can to just navigate a very complicated issue that probably doesn't have a right answer.
Yeah. And I think whether or not it's something you need to work on or it's somebody else's shit that they're putting on, there's always going to be people in your own community that don't fuck with you.
Yes.
And it's so disappointing because especially if you're in a place like Vancouver and you're a black person and you just want that community and there's people who just don't fuck with you for whatever reason, that hurts. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
But like know in your heart that your blackness is enough. Know in your heart that your Indianness is enough. Know in your heart that like whoever you are is enough.
Yeah.
As you are, it's enough. And how beautiful and awesome is it for you to learn more and to incorporate more and to do more in alignment with your culture.
And so I think, what I'm kind of getting from this is that we're saying, no, it isn't possible to appropriate your own culture, but that as with a lot of things, it's about relationships.
Yes.
And it's about, you know, and even if you don't have a lot of them, it's even the internal relationship or the potential relationships. And it's about being able to course correct when you learn better.
Yep.
But there's no wrong way to be who you are.
Nope.
And I think that often, I mean, being in the diaspora, it sometimes feels like, you know, you're like this child of this place and you're really far away from home, but you shouldn't be penalized for being far away from home, right? It's painful enough sometimes to be far from home.
Yeah. And like you can help where you were born, baby.
Exactly.
Like, it is what it is.
But at the same time, we also have to be aware of our privilege. So be aware, how is the fact that I am Canadian in this like powerful country?
Yes.
You know, how might I be changing the meaning of something? And so when do I need to not take up space in a conversation?
Absolutely. Take a step back, sit down.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm with you on that. That's a good point.
So we haven't answered all of the questions, unfortunately.
I don't think we ever will, but I like having the conversation.
Yeah, I feel like more comfortable with my feelings on this subject than I did before.
Yeah.
Like I feel a little bit more confident of like the space that is and isn't mine to take up.
Yeah.
And the person of color that I want to feature for this episode is Alok Vaidmanon. So
Yes.
There's somebody that we've talked about before. They're a non-binary Indian American poet, fashion icon, activist, all of the things. And the reason I thought of Alok for this is that, you know, there's all kinds of ways that people try to guard culture and make some people feel like outsiders to that culture. Mm-hmm. And through their gender and sexual identity and their activism around that, through their fashion, I feel like they challenge the meaning of culture and cultural symbols. Mm. So they, with their fashion, like they often will wear saris or they'll wear bindis with Western clothes and mixing all of the pieces, right? Because this is the third culture. And then being non-binary, challenging who is allowed, even among Indians, who is allowed to wear a sari and what does it mean?
Right.
And Alok has really ignited my imagination in a lot of ways in terms of what does it mean to invent yourself and to contain multitudes and to allow yourself to be all of the things. And
right, without having to discard parts. You're just like, I want to be all the things, not necessarily one or the other. Because it's like, it serves you. If that makes you more of who you are, then keep all the pieces.
Yes, exactly. And I just wanted to finish by reading, and this is, I mean, you should follow Alok on Instagram if you don't already. It's at AlokVmenon. And this was an Instagram caption because they often write poetry and amazing things into their captions. So they said, shuffling between family dinners and queer parties, disparate spaces and paradigms, where often it feels like all the Indian people are cis and all the queer people are white. The collapse of history and language and memory that engenders this moment. The relentless and exhaustive ritual of asserting that we have always been to the white queers who call their genders new and the Indians who call heteronormativity home. But I know my gender is my race, is my gender, is my family, is my queers, is my soiled makeup wipes in the car on the way to my mother, is my lipstick fecund, ready to bloom on the way back.
That's so beautiful.
Yeah.
Both and, not yes. Either or.
Yes.
Hey everyone, it's Nick.
And Lala.
If you've been listening to Scene and you like what you hear,
please share us with your friends.
Subscribe to the podcast.
Follow us on Instagram at Scene the Podcast.
Write a review and just tell us what you think.
And help make this work sustainable by supporting Scene the Podcast on Patreon.
We need our beautiful community and we cannot do this without you.